This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
With me on the line right now is Reverend Radhika Sukumar White. She's a Uniting Church minister at West Epping. She was part of this protest. Radhika, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Now, is this the first protest of this kind that you have been involved in?
That is correct. So this is the 32nd Love Makes a Way vigil that has happened, but it's the first that I've taken part in.
And why did you participate?
So I got a call from one of the organisers, Justin Whalen, a couple of weeks ago. This was following an action that Love Makes a Way organised when the Nauru files came out through the Guardian newspaper. Following an action from that, they thought it would be a good idea to hold an entirely clergy-centred action, so all religious practitioners from a variety of backgrounds. And he asked if I would be interested in joining them. And I felt like I couldn't say no. This issue was so important to me that I couldn't not take part. So I said yes, and yeah.
Why is this issue so important to you personally?
Oh, so many reasons. One is that I'm a Sri Lankan Tamil Australian. My parents migrated out from Sri Lanka in the 70s, just before the Sri Lankan Civil War kind of erupted particularly bad. Luckily, they had a country that welcomed them and gave them opportunities to study, and that's the reason why my family is who we are today. But I genuinely feel a real kinship to the people of Sri Lanka, and the horrifying fact that if their story had happened a generation later, if my parents had migrated out a generation later, my story could have been in Nauru. You know, that could have been my situation. And that is a real matter of injustice for me. Why should those who were born at a different time fall under such different circumstances to my own? It was a matter of injustice for me. Obviously, as a Christian and as a minister, I believe that all people are created in the image of God, and therefore we should treat all people with respect and compassion and acceptance, because I believe that's what God calls us to do. And as a Uniting Church minister, part of my vows at my ordination, which was just 7 months ago, was to stand alongside those who are oppressed and to work for justice and peace. And I just felt like that needs to be lived out in real ways, not just words that I said yes to on a day. So for a number of reasons, it's a real issue for me.
You mentioned your parents. Did they come as asylum seekers or migrants?
Migrants, yeah. They wouldn't be classified as asylum seekers, but I believe they made the decision to apply for a visa to come to Australia because they knew that the civil war was at breaking point at that time, you know, that tensions were rising, and they knew that if they stayed around, they would either be forced to be refugees or, you know, could have been in harm's way. So I think it just came at the right time.
You mentioned before the Nauru files, which came out a couple of weeks ago, these documents about thousands of incidents in the detention centre there on Nauru Island. And I'm interested to know what concerned you most out of those reports and files that you read.
So we had as part of our vigil yesterday, we had the chance to read out some of the Nauru files and some of the case reports of these reports of abuse. The thing that struck me the most was the sense of these asylum seekers, that there was no hope for them. There was an utter hopelessness in them. There was one story of a pregnant woman who had not eaten for a good 3 days. And when asked by a Save the Children caseworker why that was, she said, well, nobody cares. There's no point. And that really, that was awful for me, that you know, asylum seekers who are trying to find a safe home are feeling utterly without hope. It's something we really take for granted. That's, I guess, what struck me the most, not just the physical violence and the sexual assault, but the real hopelessness of these people who are in indefinite detention.
What was the experience like for you, I guess, sitting in the Prime Minister's office for about 5 hours or in the foyer of that electoral office? You know, how did that feel?
Look, I'm not going to lie. It was a heavy experience, in a manner of speaking. I felt very supported by those who were around me. yeah, we were kind of there for each other in a funny way. Mm. But I think the fact that we, the whole time, we engaged in prayer and singing of hymns, and we actually engaged in communion together, and we read from scriptures and everything, it was actually quite a sacred event, I felt. Mm. I felt that God was really present as we did this wow. vigil together. And you know, the seven of us who otherwise would have been basically strangers except for a couple of friendships became somehow bonded because of this experience of praying without ceasing, you know, mm. for these people who are so vulnerable. So it was heavy and it was anxiety raising. And the police presence is not a comfortable sensation, but I really felt like it was sacred as well.
Mm. And do you feel that it's made a dent, an impact, I guess, in the community or politically?
I think it has in some ways. I think that not just media outlets picking up the story, but the fact that it has gone just nuts on social media, mm-hmm. and the sense that each of the seven of us came into this action with our own stories and our own backgrounds, and those individual stories, I believe, have affected people in a way to say, this is no longer a case, a situation to be ignored. This affects people that we know, people that minister to us, and they all have their stories of why this is such a big issue for them. So I believe it's made a change. And I think more than anything, the more and more actions like this happen, the more this issue becomes too big to ignore, too important to ignore, both by media and by hopefully our government. So, I live in hope that, yes, it's made a change.
Radhika, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.